the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tom Rowe in Akron. You've tuned into the WGXC Morning Show. And this morning we are going to hear about environmental activism in Coeymans in southern Albany County, the town that's had a lot of political controversy lately. We'll also hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. And it all starts right after this when the local news begins on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
This is the news. This is the news. This is the network. Network. On air, in air, waves controlled. On air, in air, channel connection. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network, network.
And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network. And the moon turns to blood. A stream runs through. And the moon turns to blood. This is the network, network.
This is the news.
This is the network.
This is Stuart Moxham of The Gist, and you are listening to 90.7 FM WGXC Acre.
The Catskill Town Board meets every first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall and holds a committee meeting the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. You can turn out in person at the Catskill Town Hall to speak at these meetings or tune in to a live web stream through the Catskill Town Board and WGXC. Go to wgxc.org/listen or click on the listen button at wgxc.org to tune in to any of the Catskill Town Board meetings, the first Tuesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. and the third Wednesday of the month at 6:30 p.m. at wgxc.org and townofcatskillny.gov.
WAYFARM respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands WAYFARM and our radio station, WGXC, operate and broadcast. The Mohicans named themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Mohicanituck, the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For further information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge-Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Wendy Schmaltz of Claverick, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tom Rowe in Acre with the WGXC Daily News for Friday, June 9th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Rachel Silberstein reports in the Times Union that rainfall on June 8th was expected to remove some of the wildfire smoke from New York skies and may end air quality advisories in much of the state, according to State Department of Environmental Conservation. The fires are still burning in Canada, but the wind changed on June 8th too, which should also help the Hudson Valley air quality. National Weather Service meteorologist Lee Picard in Albany said on June 8th, quote, "We might have some persistent haze, but we're hopeful that we're going to start seeing some clearing through this evening," unquote. New York now plans to send several forest rangers to Canada to put out the fires. Governor Kathy Hochul said, quote, "These are such remote areas, they are almost impossible to access," unquote. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Emily Kenny at Spectrum News talks to some New York farmers about the impact of the lingering smoke in the air on crops. Kara Atwood, a farmer at Kubeka Farms in Kirkville, complained about the lack of rain lately and said of the smoke, quote, "It is reducing plant growth from a slow crawl to a complete standstill. This is almost like a 1-2 punch to early crops." Justine Vanden Heuvel, who studies grapes and is a professor in the horticultural department at Cornell University, said, quote, "The big worry in situations like this is smoke taint, which is basically when certain compounds are absorbed by the skin of the grape and then they're released at fermentation. It results in wines that taste burnt or smoky or ashy," unquote. But right now, grapes are in a flowering stage, and Vanden Heuvel said, quote, "To our knowledge, flowers don't absorb those aromas, so there is no reason to think it would impact the grapes," unquote. The larger problem on farms now, she said, is that people need to do all sorts of work outdoors on farms right now, and it is dangerous to breathe the air out outside right now. Read more about this story at Spectrum News. Roger Hennigan Gilson reports in the Times Union that about 40 people protested June 7th outside the Columbia County Sheriff's Office after a man being held by the Sheriff's Office was detained by federal immigration agents. A man was about to be released from the sheriff's office on June 2nd after serving time for an alcohol-related offense. But before he made it out of the building, the sheriff's office turned him over to agents from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Advocates for local migrants argue that they violated policies against the sheriff's office colluding with ICE. Columbia County Sanctuary Movement co-founder Brian McCormick won't say the man's name, as disclosing could unnerve other undocumented people the sanctuary movement works with. The issue was discussed at a June 6 meeting of Hudson's Police Reform Implementation Committee, where Columbia County District Attorney Paul Chaika said he did not know, quote, "why anyone thinks that they have the authority to make an inquiry of the sheriff," unquote, saying the sheriff's office was a governmental entity separate from the county board of supervisors, and said that Columbia County Sheriff Don Kraft did not have to continue to cooperate with the reform committee. Kraft said ICE learned the man was at the jail due to, quote, "biometrics," unquote, meaning that fingerprints were taken of the man and sent to state and federal databases. Kraft said that ICE detention was, quote, "a transfer," unquote, and said it happened 20 minutes before his release time. Columbia County Board of Supervisors Chair Matt Morrell said County Attorney Robert Fitzsimmons assured him no policies had been broken, saying, quote, "from what I can gather, the sheriff's office did not contact ICE. ICE contacted them," unquote. The issue will be discussed at the County Board of Supervisors public safety meeting on June 20th. Read more about this story in the Times Union, and read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Friday, June 9th. Local early morning temperatures range from 43 degrees in Steventown, of course, to 48 degrees in Medusa. Now that's pretty homogeneous, and I'm sure we can blame the smoke for it. Okay, first getting out of the way, regional average soil temperature is 58 degrees. Pollen levels for today will be medium, but you can thank the wildfires for that. It has also slowed down changes in a lot of weather metrics that often lead to things like arthritis, pain, and other physical issues. The filtered light has also slowed down growth of everyone's lawns, so there is your silver lining. The fires are still burning and the smoke is still swirling, but right now it is up to the wind who gets it, and that could change at any time. Right now the area seems to be clearing out. Further west you go, the more likely you are to run into the smoke. Anyone watching on our Telegram channel saw the live air quality sensors come down as the day went on. For all that, my sources and more, look for the better weather on Telegram, all one word. Today, rain chances remain and get stronger around 12 p.m. It's still not looking widespread, so isolated areas might get a downpour while your neighbor will end up watering their lawn. Overnight temperatures fall to 48 degrees. Some light rain chances linger Saturday morning, then we see a high of 75 at 4 p.m. A dry afternoon leads to a chilly night hitting 50 degrees. Sunday, Dry morning, high of 80 at 3 p.m., then more rain. Clouds move in, cooling things off, rain, more rain on Monday, and a high of 76. Today's tide schedule is low tide at 2 a.m., high tide at 7:58 a.m., low tide again at 2:49 p.m., and high tide once again at 8:46 p.m. Those times, again, are for Friday. Today's river temperature will be 70 degrees. The tide strength will be average. Sunset today will be at 8:15 p.m. and sunrise tomorrow will be at 5:16 a.m. Looking way up, we see a bunch of near-Earth objects of note show up next week starting Monday, the largest of which is 506 meters wide, carrying about, say, 10,000 megatons. For scale, that's enough power to turn all of Europe into a parking lot. Plasma winds will be slow at 281 kilometers per second with a thin density of 1 proton per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 MHz till dark, with fair conditions below 25 MHz overnight. The 24-hour predicted KP index is 1.6, quiet. The current sunspot number is 149, and this has been the Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
Survive All, one of the nation's leading manufacturers of fallout shelters, now combines sturdy steel with durable concrete block for
a civil defense approved basement type do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Ensure protection for your family. See a Survive All shelter today.
I'm afraid of the world. I'm afraid I can't help it. As smoke from Canadian wildfires blankets New York and much of the East Coast, it's causing a wide range of health effects, and not just for people. According to the Environmental Protection Agency, they can be as minor as eye and respiratory tract irritation to worsening asthma and even causing heart failure. And humans aren't the only ones feeling the effects of smoky skies. Wildlife is compromised through loss of habitat, food, and water sources. Karina Newsom with the National Wildlife Federation notes climate change could make this a regular occurrence.
With there being more frequent, more intense, longer burning wildfires, and of course, natural movement of air, we can absolutely expect to see wildfire smoke occurring in places where maybe wildfires are not actually burning, like we're seeing right now, being a more frequent experience.
New York Governor Kathy Hochul has ordered New York firefighters to help combat the Canadian blazes. As for the Belmont Stakes this weekend, Hochul says she's taking additional measures to protect racehorses and spectators, adding if the air quality hits 200, the race will be canceled. Some states dealing with the smoke will need to petition the EPA for what is known as an exceptional event. It's the term for an unusual occurrence that affects air quality and cannot be reasonably controlled using traditional methods. Otherwise, Dr. Russell Dickerson with the University of Maryland says the EPA could possibly make states like New York and New Jersey responsible for air quality violations.
We're going to be in trouble with the EPA because these are violations. So it'll go to court to decide, are they going to blame the states? Because the states have the responsibility for fixing their air quality problems to a large extent. And these are violations. They're going to put us over the top.
The Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee held a hearing on the impacts of escalating wildfires. A spokesman for the Interior Department said the bipartisan infrastructure law can help the U.S. deal with these kinds of blazes in the future. It provides over $1.5 billion for wildland fire research to help with risk reduction. I'm Edwin J. Vieira, New York News Connection. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
This is Pastor Kim, your perpetual optimist. But right now we have coming up Pastor, Dr., Reverend, Reverend Brother, Pastor Brother, Friend, Richard Turpin. And he's coming. I invited him to come and talk to us about what they have going on for Juneteenth in Catskill, New York, right over the bridge. You have on Juneteenth something that is amazing and it's going to be part of your living legacy for the community of Catskill. And again, I underscore, he's never lived there. He wasn't born there. He ain't from there. He, you know, but this is another gift that God is giving to the community of Catskill and then, and indeed Greene County, through your ministry and your yes to the call to Catskill and to Second Missionary Baptist Church. So what's happening on June 19th?
Okay. On June 19th, we're going to be celebrating our very first, have our very first celebration of June 19th as well. And, you know, we have some things. We've been looking at Hudson. I'm coming over to Hudson. I'm going to be pickpocketing them over there, see what they're doing. I know a few people over there. They told me they invited me over. So I'm going to go and watch it because this is our first one. And one of the things that I have told some of the workers out of the Hudson's Juneteenth celebration is that I wanted the first one in Catskill to be about education. I didn't want a lot of hoopla. I wanted the first one to be about knowing why Juneteenth is Juneteenth, so that as we go forward, as you pile on more and more, you'll have a foundation underneath you of knowing why we do what we do. Just don't get out there and just be dancing and yelling and don't know why you're dancing and yelling. So our very first one is going to really be a lot of educational. We're bringing in some folks from Hudson to help us out. We also have, we're going to have poem readings and dancers and clergy. We're also going to be giving honor to the African-American people who grew up in, who was police officers in Catskill, boxers in Catskill, the historians in Catskill. We're going to be giving honor to them, you know, by letting our young community know that, listen, there were some folks here that had to go through some struggles here, you know, that really had to deal with segregation, even though they came up out the South. But here, they were just up South, and they ran into a lot of other things that was happening down South. So we're going to have that. It's going to be, we're going to have free T-shirts, free food, soft drinks, speakers, dancers, poem readers. We're going to have that for Juneteenth. Now, that's going to start at 2 o'clock. But at 12 o'clock, we are going to have a street honorary renaming ceremony on the West Main Street in front of the school. We're going to have a street renaming as Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Way. And we're looking forward to having that. We got a great keynote speaker. The Lieutenant Governor Antonio Delgado is going to come, and he is going to give us a great message. We have village officers, the school officers giving greetings, the village officers giving greetings, our senator, assemblyman, a couple other people, plus the president of the Ecumenical Council. We speak for the clergy. And then we found a Grammy to be won in the life of Sister Tanya Motley. She is going to come and sing that Whitney, the way Whitney used to sung that at the Super Bowl, the Star Spangled Banner. She is going to put Waves in the River. She's coming to sing for this event, and we're just looking. Then we're going to march arm in arm, the same way Dr. King and everyone else who was against civil rights was fighting for civil rights. And then we're going to march from the site, which is going to be in the parking lot right across the street from the school, and then we're going to march up to the site where we're going to unveil his name. My God, this has never happened in the village of Catskill, New York. We had the heavyweight champion of the world, undefeated.
We had
Mr. Michael Tyson, right? He ain't got no name down there. They don't have no street name after him.
Mm-hmm.
But he never did anything like Dr. King did, and I'm not saying he does, but I just wanted to say this is our first time. We're very excited. We welcome in everybody to come. We really need you to be there at 12 o'clock. They're going to cut the street off because when the lieutenant governor comes, you know, he has his men does what they got to do, and there ain't nothing moving when he's speaking. So
yes.
Come, please come and share with us.
I understand. I heard that this is the first time there's been any kind of Black celebration in Catskill since 1972. So, you know, we're really grateful for this. And so I wanted you to come on because I wanted people to know what was going on over there. And then some people that's on that side of the river on that side of New York, you know, and it's easier to get over there. And then if you're on this side of the river and on the Albany side of things and you don't go over that bridge, you got something going over here. We also wanted to be educational. We wanted to have that foundation. And so we did choose that site of the cemetery, the burial ground for colored people, and come out and hear about what that was about. That's a fascinating part of our history as well. And we're about out of time. Oh, yeah.
And new dawn is awakened, yet nothing is changed. Our freedom was once taken, don't wanna live no more in chains. That's why I call a black liberation struggle. Now give up the fight, no, no. Cause it's a black liberation struggle. Man and man unite. Every time I open my mouth, the wicked, yeah, just trying to get me out. But it's a black liberation struggle. Now give up the fight, no, no, no. I miss a black liberation struggle. Peasants and all unite. There must be some change, yeah. Cause Jah got all men into his reign. Don't give up. Please live up. Don't give up. Please live up. Yet nothing has changed. Our freedom was once taken. I don't wanna live no more in chains. That's why I called a black liberation struggle.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We looked at the history and traditions of the Constitution, at what the framers and the founders thought about. And when I drilled down to that level of analysis, it became clear to me that the framers themselves adopted the Equal Protection Clause, the 14th Amendment, the 15th Amendment in a race-conscious way.
U.S. Supreme Court Justice Ketanji Brown Jackson spoke during oral arguments in a case over whether a congressional redistricting map in Alabama violated the Voting Rights Act. In a 5-4 decision, the High Court ruled the map must be redrawn, upholding a precedent saying states must create the maximum number of majority or near-majority black congressional districts where voting is racially polarized. In a dissenting opinion, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote the ruling amounts to what he called racial entitlement, not permitted in the Constitution or in law. As states across the East Coast deal with smoke from Canadian wildfires causing health problems for residents with breathing issues, further challenges lie ahead. Some states will need to petition the EPA for an exceptional event to avoid penalties for violating federal air quality standards. Russell Dickerson with the University of Maryland says the EPA could possibly find afflicted states responsible.
We're going to be in trouble with the EPA because these are violations. So it'll go to court to decide, are they going to blame the states? Because the states have the responsibility for fixing their air quality problems to a large extent. And these are violations. They're going to put us over the top.
In the wake of several states passing laws banning gender-affirming care, regulating restroom use, and restricting participation in girls' sports, President Joe Biden announced a series of new initiatives will be implemented to protect LGBTQ plus Americans from discrimination. Along with a new coordinator to protect LGBTQ students from book bans, he called on Congress to pass the Equality Act.
We're going to strengthen the physical safety, dedicated resources, the federal coordination of Better Protect Pride celebrations, marches, community centers, healthcare providers, and small businesses.
A new wealth-building program will be available in a few North Central states for Black residents descended from slaves. The Open Road Fund, created from a $50 million donation from the Bush Foundation, will offer grants of $50,000 to at least 800 eligible applicants. Danielle M. Colley, with the group Nexus Community Partners, says the fund will help people who've dealt with institutional barriers to build a better sense of well-being.
It might mean that you'll be able to put a down payment on a home so that you don't have the stress of unstable housing any longer. It might mean that you are able to invest in education and you can finish that degree that maybe you've been putting off.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1937. That was the day Consumers Power Company employees near Flint, Michigan, shut off generators and turbines at the Zilwaukee Power Plant. 2,000 workers organizing with the Public Utilities Union under the direction of the UAW effectively cut off power to everything except hospitals, city sanitation plants, and dairies. The company's office workers joined the walkout, hanging a banner across the Flint District office building that read, "Quit stalling." The company had dragged its heels on an agreement promising union recognition, a closed shop, wage increases, and an end to 24-hour scheduling of troubleshooters. The strike cut power to an estimated 165,000 Flint residents. It also forced the closing of 6 area General Motors plants and impacted industrial centers like Saginaw and Bay City. The strike ended a temporary truce that Governor Frank Murphy had forced between the UAW and Consumers Power, which ended a several-hour-long walkout at the power plant earlier in the month. The strike paralyzed 13 counties across the Saginaw Valley. When news of the second strike hit, Murphy put the National Guard on standby. He snapped orders at UAW leader Homer Martin to get those lights back on. I will not stand by and see those people in darkness tonight. Top union officials insisted the strike was unauthorized and that a tentative settlement had been reached. But workers demanded to see the actual terms of the agreement before they agreed to go back to work. The workers ratified the contract. Tensions continued. Governor Murphy demanded that the county sheriff organize a special force to prevent future utility strikes, while the UAW vowed to curb wildcat strikes through investigation and discipline.
Labor History in 2 brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Next, we have an interview from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org.
I'm Steve Pierce with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm here with Sarah Prooksma and talking to her about her participation in the Air Justice Network. Tell us a bit about yourself and the area where you live.
Hi, Steve. I live in Queemans, and we live in a beautiful little town and lots of historic architecture and a lot of industry, too. But it's a lovely town that we choose to call home.
And what is it that brought you into the Air Justice Lab network? What is it about the air quality around here that concerns you?
Well, absolutely, it's the industry in the area. When we moved here, we did know that, you know, pollution was going to have to be something that we would have to contend with. So I think just having the air monitor is. It's just a responsible thing to do. You know, we have young children, and I want to make sure to protect their health and our community at large.
Well, the air monitor is going to pick up, you know, whatever the general air quality is in the region, of course. Is there anything specific to the area and to the neighborhood that you're worried about, pollution sources that you're wondering about?
Certainly whatever's coming out of the Lafarge stacks. There have been issues that we've dealt with, you know, even just being here since 2017. There's been fires at the port with car batteries setting fire, and then there's a huge blaze that went on for quite a while. So there's just a lot of industry and a lot of activity that makes you wonder, is it safe? And also, I think it's important to have our own way of knowing if the air is safe, because quite frankly, it's not ideal, but we can't entirely trust our leadership at this time. So it's a good way to kind of keep them honest.
Now, you're involved in the local environmental movement as well. What have you been engaged with so far? Who are you working with, and you know, who are the players here?
As far as like environmental like activities, I'm associated with the Clean Air Coalition, and really, I'd work with anybody who wants to you know, work toward advocating for and protecting our environment. There's a lot of really great people in the area that are conscientious of the environmental conditions. So I'm just glad to be a part of it, and I'm learning a lot through them. And I think it's exciting, and it's really fascinating too. The more you learn about it, everything is so connected, and I'm interested in the little things that we can do on even a daily basis to help protect our environment. And that's part of what the Purple Air Monitoring System is doing. It's something small that I can do that, you know, helps us to collect data on our air quality.
And what other kinds of things can people do, do you think, to ensure the health and safety of the neighborhood and the region?
I kind of like this slogan. I'm not sure where it originated, but it's like reduce, reuse, and recycle. So that's kind of my internal motto. My husband would tell you it's a little annoying, actually, because he's like, oh my gosh, do we have to save this? And I'm like, yeah, we do. I'm also an artist, so a lot of what I save, I like to repurpose in my art, or I reuse it in some other way. So I think that's a good motto to live by.
I think I overheard you saying that you're part of the Democratic Committee in town. Is that connected in some way to your overall concerns? I assume that it is.
It is. And, you know, it's funny because I got involved into everything when I learned about the Conservation Advisory Committee, which has since been abolished through the current administration. And just by getting involved through there, I met people who were running on the Democratic Committee. So I've just met these wonderful people in town. And, you know, helping with the Democratic Committee has been really interesting and great as well, just to help get everybody's voices heard. You know, it shouldn't really be any one person ruling Queemans. There's definitely an imbalance of leadership at the moment.
And do you think that affects the ability of the political apparatus to respond to environmental concerns and other kinds of community concerns?
Oh, absolutely. It's actually really hard to even be respected or listened to at town board meetings. Just at this last town board meeting that I went to, as I walked up to the podium, the supervisor, George D. McHugh, turns over and says to Linda Bruno, who's also on the town board, and he goes, oh, here we go. So that's just the level of respect that these people have for people that, you know, care about the environment and are vocal about it.
I'm Steve Pierce with the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm here with Sarah Prooksma and talking to her about her participation in the Air Justice Network. So it's interesting, as I travel around doing these air monitor installations, the character of the response that people have received from their environmental activism. Sometimes it's this universal consensus that people have. Everybody knows that there's a problem, is working to fix it. And sometimes there's more contention. There's people arguing, you know, it's more more polarized. And it sounds like this community veers a little bit more towards the polarized side. There's a little bit of contention around the what needs to get done and how.
Oh, yeah. It's very polarized. Just a few years ago, the mostly Democratic town board tried to put through the clean air law, and they did put through the clean air law. That was just before I started getting involved in the, into the political scene and heavy into the environmental scene here. But of course, once this supervisor, George McHugh, got into office, he overturned, I should correct that. He didn't overturn, he amended the law. So it's not in effect anymore.
What sort of response have you gotten from your neighbors to your activism?
My immediate neighbors, either none or that they're supportive because they, you know, they know that it needs to be done. And, you know, sort of thinking about the neighbors like as the community in a whole, there's a lot of very supportive people that are glad that I'm speaking out. It does come with a little bit of a price, but I'm also just not going to be quiet about it. It's too important. There's plenty of kids here. That we have, you know, schools just like every other district has. And, you know, we matter. We might be low income, but we matter. And I'm not going to shy away from saying what needs to be said.
Have you noticed any progress towards the Clean Air Coalition's goals?
I think so. I think there's a lot of very smart, very ambitious, well-intending people on the Clean Air Coalition. And I'm currently not on the steering committee, but I help them in, you know, in any ways that I can. You know, and they've really been moving forward, and I think they're making a great difference.
And what would you like to see in a blue sky, literally, environment? How would you imagine the community being?
I would love to see, you know, more intentional, eco-friendly practices. So another issue that we just had in town was the clearing of just about 27 acres of forest, and that was just vastly upsetting to many, many people. You know, and if there were some laws in effect to preserve some of that space, I think it would have went a long way. This acreage that was cleared is private property. So I understand, you know, it's your property. You do with it what you want. But how about some kind of like, you know, if there was a buffer put into place, like a local law to ensure that there's buffer for the other people like living next to them, or something to preserve maybe a certain size tree, you know, because this was a mature forest that was just clear cut. You know, I know for a lot of people that's scary because they hear, oh, more laws, you want to prohibit what I can do on my land. And that's upsetting to a lot of people. But I think there's little things that we can do that would make a big difference.
I usually forget to ask something that somebody wants to talk about, so let me give you a chance to fill in any blanks that might be left. Anything you want to add?
Oh, I just think it'd be great if people wanted to check out the Clean Air Coalition website. Please do check it out. There's a lot of interesting information there, and thanks so much for listening.
Thank you very much for your help.
Thank you.
That interview was from
WOOC.
To learn more about this program, the Sanctuary for Independent Media, visit us online at mediasanctuary.org. Thank you.
That was from the album Amassed from Spring Hill Jack and Daniel Carter on Reeds. The song's called Lit on the radio at WGXC.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC News Update. Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that New York's Office of Cannabis Management is trying to get the stumbling rollout of legal cannabis sales fixed. Cannabis has been legal in New York for more than a year, but there are few places to buy it. More than 200 growers are sitting on roughly 300,000 pounds of cannabis they can't sell. Currently, the Office of Cannabis Management lists only 13 stores open in the state, most in New York City. Stores in Binghamton, Ithaca, Albany, and Rensselaer are the only available locally. Governor Kathy Hochul and other state cannabis officials had predicted 100 stores would be open by this summer. The Office of Cannabis Management and industry stakeholders are discussing several proposals to get more stores open and more sales happening in the state. One proposal discussed, for instance, would allow growers to sell last year's crop at concert venues, fairs, farmers markets, and other events, perhaps through retail licensees who do not have stores open yet. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that after 15 years, Town of Hunter Republican Committee Chair Gina Guarino has resigned effective September 30th. Guarino said, and I quote, "We slowly changed the face of our village and town by carefully and judiciously seeking out candidates who have since been elected and enhanced our community towards a brighter future. I could not be any prouder of the roads we have carved and the advancements we have made. We left an incredible mark on our town for its future. A chair would not ask for more, and so I do not," end quote. Guarino picked Huntertown councilperson Dolph Semenza to run the Republican caucus on June 1st. Sean Mahoney was nominated for re-election as town supervisor, and incumbent Republican Raymond Legg and incumbent Democrat David Kuchel were nominated to run for re-election on the town boards. Interim Highway Superintendent Bob Blaine was nominated for re-election in the November election. The story does not say who will take over Guarino's role as Hunter's Republican chair. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Raymond Pignone reports for Columbia Green Media that Peckham Industries, with a Hudson River terminal in Athens, has bought Etets and Sons of Middletown for an undisclosed amount as the company expands into the southern Hudson Valley. Tetz is the leading aggregate ready-mix concrete and hot-mix asphalt producer in Orange County, while Peckham does similar work in New York, Massachusetts, Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Vermont. Peckham employs 1,200 people at more than 30 facilities and is adding 130 more employees with this purchase. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. And that wraps up the WGXC News Update. You can visit our website at WGXC.org for local weather updates, public meetings, a community calendar, or COVID-19 updates. And while you're there, please click on the donate button to become a WGXC sustaining supporter or make a one-time donation. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow. And now, here is your WGXC weather update. The forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Friday, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 2 p.m. Some of those storms could produce small hail. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 66 degrees. On Friday night, a chance of showers and thunderstorms. And some of those storms could produce small hail. It will be mostly cloudy with a temperature low of around 49 degrees. And on Saturday, a chance of showers with thunderstorms also possible after 2 p.m., and some of those storms could produce small hail. It will be partly sunny with a temperature high near 71 degrees. And Saturday night, it will be mostly clear with a temperature low of around 51 degrees. And that is your weather update from WGXC. 90.7 FM, radio for open ears, in Greene and Columbia Counties.
Here's 2022 new music from Kate LeBond. The song is called Remembering Me.
We just wanna party.